Blog Talk Radio.
Are you looking to take your social technology strategies to the next level? Then do we have a show for you. Social Geek Radio co-hosts AK Stout and Deb Evans chat weekly with innovative technology folks who share their experiences, tips, and tricks to help you take your business to the next level. Social Geek Radio is brought to you by Saying It Social and Deb Evans Consulting, LLC. To learn more about their unique services, including but not limited to speaking, consulting, and training, visit AK Stout and DebEvansConsulting.com.
There, this is Deb Evans coming to you once again from Houston, Texas, and we have the ever happy, I can't even imagine how happy AK is right now because of the Ravens win.
Okay, my computer just died. Yes, I am extremely happy. It's only because I yelled go Ravens at the end of the show last week. I'm convinced is why we won, but yes, I'm elated, to say the least.
Well, that and the I wore my purple. I've been wearing my purple Charity Miles shirt, you know, doing everything I can. And I even watched the game. I mean, I watched some of those playoff games, but I sat and I watched the Super Bowl, but it was for you. Yeah. So congratulations on that win.
Thank you.
So we have a special guest tonight, someone that you know, and I was picking John's brain a little bit in the green room. We've got John Morgan, the author of Brand Against the Machine, and he could not answer this question for me, AK. Mm-hmm. I asked him, it's like, so how do you and AK know one another?
Oh, well, that's probably because we don't know each other.
I found that out. Well, we know everybody cyberly. It's okay.
Yeah, well, no, it was when we had Dave Delaney on the show, and he was mentioning some books that he really liked, and John's book was one of them. And then at my Baltimore social media group meetup, I was like to give out a book each time we meet to somebody who comes. And I tweet, and Dave mentioned two books, I guess. So I tweeted out from that account, which of these books should I give away at the next meetup, and John, doing his wonderful Twitter keywords monitoring, since I had mentioned the name of his book, responded back, and he said something to the effect of, you know, do I get a vote or something like that, and then, so because he responded, obviously I chose his book as the one to give out, and then he suggested that it would be cool for the people who attended the meeting if we did some sort of a virtual interview, and I was like, aha! I do have a platform for that, so I...
Yay! Well...
And here he is.
And here he is. So, John, welcome. It's really nice to have you on tonight. Thank you.
Thank you so much to both of you for having me on. I'm a little upset about the whole Ravens talk because I'm a 49ers fan.
Uh-oh.
Not a fan, but I was pulling for them to win. Not so much because I love the 49ers, but actually and awkwardly because I hate the Ravens.
Oh, my God. All right, bye.
Okay. Yep. She's going to mute you, John, but I have control of the dashboard, so she can't do that. So we'll leave sports aside, and we will not touch politics and religion right now. I'm dying to read your book. I will be honest and say that I haven't read it yet, but I've been listening to a lot of and reading a lot of the reviews. So I've got some questions for you, and I know AK does as well. She's actually read through it, and she's a raving fan. But the first thing I have to ask you is, okay, the name of the book is Brand Against Machine. What do you mean by machine?
It's a great question. The machine is the noise in the marketplace. You know, no matter what field or industry someone's in, it's overcrowded. And everybody, you know, starts their business with these high hopes of, you know, great success, and their business is going to be different and unique, yet they really just sort of fall in line with everyone else, and they start marketing the same way everyone else does, and it's like there's this machine just blasting marketing messages at us every single day, but the consumer didn't ask for it. We didn't want it. We don't look forward to those marketing messages. And that's exactly what we have to now as business owners and entrepreneurs shift our paradigm, shift the way we go about marketing our business, and understand that forcing our message on people not only is not effective, it's actually going to do way more harm than good, and ultimately you're not going to be a success following that model anymore.
I get that. That makes sense. Okay, do we still have you with us?
Yes, sorry. I'm running to grab my power cord.
I was like, she disappeared. Like, where did she go? But she's here. Well, that makes sense. I mean, we are fighting all those messages and everything that's going on. So, AK?
Yes. So, sorry. Being organized. Like Jen was saying, I've read 60 pages, I think, of the book, and I'm regretting that I didn't read the rest of it before the show because I was just reading it the last hour, and I feel like everything John writes in his book is exactly how I feel. So I'm so excited to be on here and pick your brain. And so one of the things that, as I was sort of going through the beginning chapters, you say visibility beats out ability. And so the question is, if that's the case, then can your ability as a business be awful or stink if you have all this wonderful visibility?
That's a great question. Yeah. See, what happens is most people are just focused on their ability, sharpening their skills, improving what they do in the hopes that someone's going to discover them and then sing their praises and they're going to, you know, become popular and successful. That's not reality. If you have the greatest product or service in the world and no one knows you exist, you're broke and you're out of business. So what happens is we have to, like you said, we have to shift the way we're doing this, now focus on increasing our visibility more so that people even know who we are and put the emphasis on that. But to your question, this is the part that we really have to clarify, is that your ability can't be horrible. You know, you still have to be good at what you do. The visibility gets you in the door. The ability keeps you there. So if everyone in the world knows, you know, about your product or service, but it's crap, then that's obviously a bad thing and you're not going to be successful. So it takes both to achieve success. The problem is traditionally we're just told to focus on the ability part, and then we end up being really, really good at what we do, but only us and our parents know about
it. Exactly. Well, I found one of the ways that people that are kind of hearing this and getting the idea, okay, I know I need to have visibility. So I was just going to push messages out there, which we've already sort of discussed is not the way to do it, but one of the ways that they go about trying to tackle, at least from a social media perspective, and try to keep that visibility is to schedule messages for the Facebook and through Twitter. What's your position on that?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I go back and forth, to be honest with you. I've got a lot of friends who will, you know, violently fight against, you know, scheduling, you know, message and things like that, especially on, you know, Twitter and Facebook and these type of networks. I've got a lot of other friends who do it constantly. I see how both can work, but here's the danger. Okay, the danger with scheduling these things is that you never know when some type of, you know, worldwide event is going to occur, and it's usually during those times that your automatic messages now that are going out look very insensitive. Let me just give you two quick examples of this. On the night that Osama bin Laden was killed, everyone on Twitter across the world is talking about this. Barely a single tweet was about anything else. Yet People Magazine has their automatic, you know, tweets going out talking about what Brad Pitt, you know, is wearing on the cover of their magazine, and it just seems like it's in poor taste. You know, we get that it's automated. We get that it's scheduled. It just seems, you know, bad. When the tragedy happened with school shootings, you know, in the recent months, same thing. You know, while this is going on and there's people almost turning to their social media friends for comfort and for answers and, you know, to just talk about it, then you've got someone saying, you know, check out my blog post, you know, 3 tips, you know, to better time management. It just seems dumb, right? So I think that's the danger in it, is that while those events, fortunately for, you know, us, are rare, when they happen, they could really damage your brand if your whole thing is scheduled out. And the other thing that I think is a little bit dangerous with it is you're scheduling them out. It's really easy then to get lazy and forget the engagement part. And especially with social media, that's the key part, is actually engaging with people, talking to them, allowing them to, you know, have a conversation with you. That's where it becomes successful. And so I just think it's a slippery slope. I'm not just against it, but I think a lot of people, like I said, they get lazy with it, and then it does more harm than good.
So then I've got a question for you. So let's say, you know, we are scheduling tweets because for business, they just have to be scheduled, to, you know, whatever, you know, your Zappos or whoever it is, and you've got to throw some things out. Wouldn't it make sense then to, you know that something in real life is happening? So you just go back and you just delete everything that's scheduled. I think that's what happens, is folks forget that they've thrown these tweets out there or Facebook posts or whatever. You can easily go back and delete them, and, you know, so that it's not interfering with what's going on in life. But I think brands forget to do that.
Well, you're exactly right. I've got a friend who one time, you know, had scheduled a bunch of tweets so that he could go to a movie theater to watch, you know, a movie marathon. It was like 3 movies in a row. So all day, he's not on his phone. He's not checking Twitter. So
right.
He scheduled, you know, all these tweets, and I can't remember what happened that day, but something tragic happened. And exactly what you said happened. You know, it wasn't until like 6 p.m.
Right.
that he even got online and realized, oh, wow, you know, this happened, right? And then, of
right.
course, he saw, you know, a lot of negative feedback about what he was doing because, again, even if people realize that it's scheduled, they're thinking the same thing you just said. Why don't you go in there and delete it? And so it's just, if you can stay on top of it, if you know that you're going to be there, then great, that's fine, go ahead. But you got to know that you can, you know, take responsibility and control it.
Right.
And one thing that I've seen happen with that is somebody will schedule a post, but in the interim between their last post and their scheduled post, they had people, let's say, go to their Facebook page and ask questions. So it wasn't that they came back to the computer and blatantly ignored them and manually put up that post. It was that it was auto-scheduled. But to the outside person looking at their page, they don't know that post is auto-scheduled. So they feel like that company went to the page and put up a post and really did blatantly ignore them.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I've just seen so many nightmares with it. I saw recently a very influential author and speaker with a huge following online. In the middle of the day, he had a tweet that goes out that says, I'm so exhausted, I'm going to bed. And, you know, this is the middle of the day, right? And so it just, you know, sounds like, you know, he's had a horrible morning or something. And then his next tweet was, sorry, that wasn't supposed to go out until at night.
Oh, no.
You know, and I'm like, you know, first of all, why are you scheduling that tweet? You know, like, how do you, you know what I mean? Like, you already
know
you're going to be that exhausted. Like, it's just, you know, at that point now you question every kind of engagement he's got, right? It just looks bad, you know. And again, I've seen it where someone has, you know, tweeted, you know, good night to everyone, and then 5 minutes later, a tweet goes out, you know, promoting their iPhone app. And it's like, you know, but you just went to bed. You know, that, you know, you just told us that. And, you know, again, I know the audience out there knows that a lot of people are scheduling this stuff, but sometimes we just don't stop and think, how does this look? And a lot of times it just makes us look really, really silly.
And I think that has a lot to do with, and it leads into my next question, with sort of, you know, knowing your audience and sort of defining your target audience and sort of knowing who you're talking to and what they can expect from you and that kind of thing. And in your book, you mentioned a great way to define your target audience, which I love. So I'm hoping you can tell us about using your 10 favorite clients to define your target audience.
Absolutely. What you want to do is, you know, and this is harder if you don't have a lot of, you know, interaction with your customers. You know, if you're just selling, you know, some kind of product where maybe you never even meet the customer, this is a little harder to do. But what you want to do is evaluate your 10 best clients and customers. And I want you to write out everything about them, right? How often they purchase from you, how long they've been clients, are they male, are they female, are they married, do they have kids, did they go to college, did they graduate college, you know, all of this stuff, you know, where they live, where they're from. You want to figure out all these different factors, including also, by the way, how they think. You know, I'm a consultant, and so it's very important to me to work with people who look at every reason why something will work rather than always looking at the reasons it won't. So, you know, someone's forward thinking is a great asset. You know, that's something that I'm looking for in clients. So when I make a list, of, you know, 10 of my best clients, what I'm then doing is listing out all these other things, and I'm trying to narrow it down to 2 or 3 and see these consistencies so that I then create what my ideal client is. And then that becomes my target market. And how I use this is great because I can use this in real life. If I'm at an event and someone comes up to me talking, in pretty much 60 seconds, I can identify whether or not I should talk to them. Are they even a prospect for me or not? I can, you know, eliminate them from that possibility. Same thing online. Who do I want to spend my time with on Facebook and Twitter carrying on a conversation with? Is it someone that could potentially do business with me, or is it someone that just, you know, wants to talk? And that's fine sometimes too, but I want my social media time to be effective because as much as I love it, it also is just a huge waste of time, right? Unless it generates business for us, then social media, while fun, doesn't necessarily help us as entrepreneurs. And so we have to start holding, you know, the tools we use, you know, to some form of accountability of, you know, actually generating results. So that's how I like to figure out who my target audience is. It's by going and seeing, okay, these are the clients that I enjoy working with. Why? And then I start to make that profile.
Well, that's a great point, and I'm kind of jumping down in the questions I want to ask you here, but I think it goes along with it, and that's, you know, you talk about sort of getting out there and making sure that you don't forget to sort of do the self-promotion piece. And, you know, I just like you, I talk to a lot of people all the time, and I'm sure you've heard this probably more times than I have, and people say they just don't have the time to do, whether it's the social media aspect or the self-promotion aspect, or they forget about it. So what strategies have you used for yourself even to make sure that you make that time in your week to do that self-promotion?
That's a great question. I'm really big on scheduling stuff, and I don't mean scheduling tweets and all that because that would be really weird if I then you know, recommended that. I mean, I schedule the time of when I'm going to be on Twitter, when I'm going to be on Facebook, and it may be just 5 minutes. You know, here and 10 minutes there, and not necessarily an hour at a time, but I just have to schedule it. And sometimes, it, you know, and those people, you know, listening to this who may follow me online, you know, they'll see it. There's some days where I'm really active and other days where I'm hardly active at all. And on those days that I'm not active, it's because I'm doing other stuff. You know, there's just other things going on, whether it's business or life or, you know, whatever the case may be, because I'm not one of these people who feels like I should document every single moment of my life. Sometimes I think we just need to enjoy the moment, you know, rather than, you know, than documenting it. You know, so for example, in December, it was my birthday. When I go out to eat with friends, you know, for my birthday, I'm not sitting there tweeting about it. you know, and it's not that, you know, the people wouldn't care or whatever. I mean, you know, some people may find that interesting or whatever. It's just that I want to be there in the moment. So I'm very, very, you know, cautious of, you know, scheduling this time, because if I don't, then Deb and AK, I swear to you, I will spend 5 hours on Facebook doing nothing.
Well, and, you know and for those people that are on a lot, and this happened to AK a couple of times because she's very active on online, and I would not find her online at all. I thought, oh, I didn't see a tweet. I didn't see a Facebook post. She was actually enjoying life, as you're saying, but I would be sending her a text message saying, are you okay? I'm worried. You know, it's like your mom in Houston here is worried about you. And she goes, oh, yeah, I'm working on a big project. And it's so easy to forget.
That is easy to forget. But see, that's a good thing, because if people miss you when you're gone, you're doing it right when you're there. You see, if you can leave Twitter for 2 weeks and no one notices, you've got a problem.
Right.
Right? You know, that's the thing. I remember I went about 14 days not posting on Facebook simply because I got tired of it. You know, I just was tired of it, tired of the people, tired of the comments, tired of seeing pictures of people's cats and, you know, everything else. And I was just done. And I couldn't think of anything to say. So I was like, you know what, I'm not even going to force it. So about 14 days went by, and you would not believe the emails I got from people who were like, you know, are you dead? Did you quit Facebook? Did they kick you off? You know, all of these questions, right? And keep in mind, I'm still active at, you know, on Twitter and my blog and through other networks during this time. It was just Facebook that I didn't do. And I realized, at first I was annoyed, but then I realized this is a really good thing, because if I was gone for 14 days and no one noticed, that's a problem for my brand.
Right.
You know, I need to leave such an impression that if I did not show up, people would think, you know who we haven't heard from in a while? This guy.
Yeah.
Right. That's true. It's very true. Yeah, I hope. Okay, so if I'm gone for a couple of days, you'll notice, right?
I will absolutely notice.
I'm sure.
But I have our alerts on for you, so I would definitely.
Yeah. We're so geeky now. Yes, my phone does alert me too that if AK sends anything. It's like, good. She sent an email. She sent the text. Well, we're talking about brands, and one of the questions that AK has here, and I'm very curious, is, you know, is it better to be unique or first to market?
That's another great question. I think, without a doubt, it's better to be unique. It seems to be this big deal, this race to be first, right, with the new idea. The problem then is you have no idea if it works, right? And I think people sometimes forget the successful brands out there that were not first. You know, Pepsi was not first. You know, Coca-Cola had been around and doing their thing. Google was not the first search engine. Facebook was not the first social network. You know, it's not. Being first is no longer the competitive advantage that it used to be. Because now what people respond to is, this is different. This is, you know, what we want. It's, in a lot of cases, it's better to be different than it is to be better in the competition. Simply being different immediately makes you stand out. I will often tell people, you know, make a list of everything your competition never does and then go do the never. You know, do the things that they won't do. Do the things they're not willing to do. You are going to instantly stand out. You have instant, you know, positioning with your brand. And so, absolutely, it's always better to be unique. But let's take a look at what's going on in the way we rent movies now, okay? So movies and DVDs have not changed. They're the same movies and the same DVDs they've been. But, you know, Netflix comes out, and they destroy Blockbuster, right? And all they were was different. It's the same inventory. We're getting the same movies, right? We're just getting them a different way, a lazier way, a better way. So that's fine. And then you think, okay, well, they've done it. They're different. Now, you know, that can never happen again. And then look what happens with Redbox. They come out and say, you know what, we're going to do it different again, right? So Blockbuster, Netflix, and, you know, Redbox all sell the exact same product, all sell it in a unique way. You know, and so look at the two that are successful, the two that are still in business, were not first. They weren't even close to being first. Right, you know, they were like the, you know,
right,
10,000th, you know, company to, you know, rent videos. So that's the best example I know of why it's so much more important to be unique and be different than it is to be first to the marketplace with something.
And you have to think about that because there's so many people that fight to be first. I thought of it first.
Yeah, well, you're exactly right. They wear like this. It's this badge of honor. Right, you know, check this out. I mean, how many times have we, you know, all three of us heard someone say, you know, oh, I've got this idea, and no one's ever thought of it. If no one's ever thought of it, it probably sucks. You know, that's probably why no one's ever thought of it, or there's nothing like that out there. It amazes me. And then the sad part is people will then have a dream, and they won't go after it because they'll say someone else is already doing that. And it's like, well, then there's the roadmap. You know, if someone else is doing what you want to do and they are making money at it, then the scary part's over. You know, there's no reason to be afraid, right? Like, you know, if I sit here and years ago I thought, okay, I want to be an author and a speaker and a consultant, and then good news, there's 10,000 million people out there doing that same thing. Great. If those idiots can do it and make money, I can too. You know, the path has already been paved.
Right.
So that's the thing is we get intimidated by someone's already been there, you know, before us. And then the flip side is we then think we've got this idea no one's ever thought of it. It's going to be amazing. You know, all that means is it's unproven. You have no idea if it works. You're just assuming that it works. You're assuming it's a good idea because you turned to your spouse and you said, you know, how about, you know, pants that, you know, light up at night automatically, and she says, that's great, honey. And then you think, wonderful, let's go on Shark Tank and, you know, get $100,000 and, you know, we're going to be rich. You know, it's a scary thing. I would rather, I mean, look at what Steve Jobs did with Apple. He did not invent the computer. He didn't invent the laptop. He did not invent the MP3 player or the tablet or any of these things. All he did was take a look at what was already out there and said, how can we do better? How can we make ours different? And then look at what they've become. Most successful brand out there today.
So don't view it as reinventing the wheel. You're just tweaking it and making it unique and better.
That's exactly right. I mean, you know, and I love that example because, you know, people will say, you know, well, you don't want to reinvent the wheel.
Invent the wheel. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, think about this. When the wheel was first invented, it was cavemen and it was made of stone. The wheels on my car are far better than what those guys had. Right? You know, we talked before the recording started, you know, that you and I were talking about my dad,
yes.
You know, him growing
yes.
up on the farm, you know, the wheels they had were wagon wheels. You know, I mean, you know, my Jeep has better wheels than that. Someone said, okay, I'm not reinventing the wheel, but as you said, I'm going to tweak it. Let's put rubber around this thing and see what happens. Let's fill it with air, you know, and see if that works. They made it better, and then, you know, the whole world changed, you know, because of it. So we can't be intimidated by what exists out there. It's sometimes it's that one little thing that makes it different that is then a breakthrough billion-dollar idea.
Right.
Well, that leads me into sort of my next couple of questions that I really, really liked in your book about positioning. The first point that you make is that you want to position yourself not necessarily as an expert, but to be the authority in your industry. Can you explain a little bit about the difference between an expert and authority? Because I have to tell you, one of my biggest pet peeves is people are going around saying they're the experts on things.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love for you to talk a little bit about the difference between those two.
Yeah, well, you know, it ticks me off as well. I mean, the thing, the way I look at it is, you know, when you claim to be an expert, that can be challenged. You know, you're saying that you know it all. If you claim to be an authority on something, you're just saying you know a lot about it.
Okay.
You're not saying you know it all. You're not saying you're the best. You know, so that's the first problem with just the language of it, of saying I'm an expert at social media. You know, first of all, no, you're not. You know, social media has not been around enough for anyone to be an expert at it, right? So that bugs me, you know, in and of itself. So I think that the way you become an authority is by, you know, helping people and putting out great content and putting out great information that your audience wants, you know, being someone they can look at and say, tell us the right way to do this or tell us the wrong way. You know, tell us your opinions, you know, give us your feedback. We want to hear, you know, what you've got to say. And, you know, the reality is there are a lot of experts out there. There are a lot of, you know, people who are really, really good at what they do. But then the term has just, you know, become so horrible that, mm-hmm. like you said, if they even call themselves that, it's like, you know, how dare they? And so it's just, it's a bad thing, you know, that's sort of what happened. But to position yourself as an authority, that just means, you know a lot about the subject. You're there to be a resource. You're there to help people and not just trying to sell them something or not just trying to claim that you're the best.
Going along the lines of being a resource, I think a lot of brands, or at least a lot of businesses that I talk to, they feel this pressure to come up with their own unique content all the time, that if they don't necessarily have something that's from within to push out, that they just shouldn't push out anything at all. But as I understand your book, in terms of, you know, being a resource, it's okay to also, in addition to creating your own content, curate content. So can you talk a little bit about sort of how a business might go with being a resource without always producing their own original content?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think you can do it. I think you can do both. I think that, you know, you should do it. You know, I look at, you know, the comments that I get on my blog or, you know, through email and, you know, people will talk to me at events and these things. And, you know, I absolutely should recommend books that I've read and that I've loved. I should recommend, you know, other people. I should recommend other tools, resources, you know, those things. I should do that when necessary. I should do that when it really does help my audience. The problem is so many people, especially because, you know, social media and blogging and these things make it so easy for us to just throw content out there, that all they're doing is sharing other people's content. And there's a big difference between, you know, curating content and creating content, and you will see that difference in your bank account. because the people who are out there creating content are making a lot more money than the people who are just out there sharing what other people have done. So you've got to always, I mean, it's got to be like, you know, if someone wanted a ratio, 90% of what you put out there should be yours, should be created by you. 10% then, you know, can be shared. But when I say, you know, position yourself as a resource and not a service provider, what I really mean there is look at how many people use all the different tools out there today to, again, just blast their message on people saying, you know, look at this special offer I've got. Look what we're offering today. You know, come check out this sale. Come check out this special. Well, how is that helpful to anyone? It's not at all. But instead, if they just put out content, again, you know, preferably content they've created, now they're being looked at as that authority. Let's use real estate as an example. I used to be a real estate agent. I owned a real estate business for many years. And the key to that business was not me begging people to let me, you know, help them buy a home or help me, you know, or have me sell their home. It was me saying, here's what's going on in the market. Here's what's happening with interest rates. Here's how, you know, these changes in the market affect your home. Here's the value of your home. Here's tips, you know, before you buy your home that you need to know. Here's tips before you sell your home that you need to know. That was me saying, hey, I'm a resource. If you need information on moving, I'm the guy to go to. I'm just here to help you. And then hopefully when the time's right, you call me. But see, now I'm positioned as someone who's helpful rather than annoying because I'm not just trying to sell them all the time. I'm actually sending them information that's valuable, which is another key, by the way, using the real estate example. You know, all of us who, you know, live anywhere, and hopefully there's no homeless people listening to this because that would be really weird, is that, you know, you get those, you know, postcards in the mail from the realtors with recipes, right? Mm-hmm. You know, here's a recipe for pumpkin pie. Here's, you know, right. The college football schedule for the year. This is crap. Well, how is this helping me, right? If I want to sell my home for top dollar, me knowing how to make a pie isn't going to get it done, right? So the good news is, in most fields, not just real estate, the content out there is so poor that if you're half good at creating content, if you've really got something to say that's going to help people, you are going to stand out, and you're going to become that resource very, very quickly.
Well, I have to interject real quick because I put a teaser out on Twitter earlier after I was reading this thing, your book about you being real estate agent. So I said to everybody that they needed to tune into the show tonight to find out what you and I had in common besides this whole marketing thing. And it was the fact that I also started out in real estate out of college when I was 22 years old. So for everybody listening, that was the key part that sometimes.
That's wonderful. Now, are you still doing that now at all?
No, I stopped about.
Oh, thank God. Okay, wonderful.
Yeah, it's about a year ago.
Yeah, congratulations. You know, I still a lot of my clients are real estate agents. When I even give those examples, it's like having flashbacks. I'm waking up in cold sweat. I've got a client who actually has a closing this Friday, and he was like, I'll be thinking about you. I was like, don't. I don't even want those vibes. You know, I don't even get me near it.
That's funny, because I did see that tweet, AK, and I was wondering. That's why I asked you guys earlier, how did you meet? And I was like, what is the common? I got it.
And then I thought the same way. I was like, the only people I know right now are the people that also just graduated college who are living with their parents. So what am I going to do? Talking about businesses and brands and wanting to make a lot of money, which I'm sure everybody listening to this is sort of probably why they're listening, you say in the book that brands that can identify and develop their anchor belief will end up making a lot of money. Can you tell our audience what an anchor belief is?
Absolutely. This is where you draw the line in the sand and you say, you know what? This is what I believe in. This is what's going on in the industry. This is where we take a stand. Okay, let me give you a couple of examples of this. Virgin has done this greatly because all Richard Branson does is take a look at different industries that are, you know, underserved, right? Whether that's, you know, the music industry or airplanes or cell phones or, you know, whatever the case may be, he looks at the ones where he doesn't feel the customers are being treated right because his anchor belief is going to be service. You know, it's funny because we point to Zappos is like the golden example for service, and I know that really pisses off Disney and Virgin because they were like, hey, we were doing the customer service thing, you know, for 50 years before the shoe company came along. But that's the thing, right, is just saying, wait a minute, you know, this is our stance. This is what we believe in, in the industry. And what's great, what happens is when your audience feels the same way because you took this stand and you've got, you know, this belief and these are your viewpoints, oh, there's customer loyalty like you would not believe, because they're saying, okay, wow, finally someone said it. We see this, you know, all the time. When someone has a strong anchor belief that they believe in, it then becomes the backbone of their company. We talked about, you know, what Steve Jobs created with Apple. You know, well, look at this, you know, his beliefs on design and how the product should function and how it, you know, could adapt into our lives, right? This is an anchor belief that they never, you know, swayed on, that this was it. And so it became very, very popular because then the audience said, yes, finally, someone. We didn't even realize how much everything else was ugly, but you made everything have a round edge, so this is beautiful. Let's, you know, buy this, right? And again, you know, that sounds like a silly example, but you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
When you have that, it's just such a powerful thing because you're now, you know, letting people know that they're not alone in how they think, right? You, that you're thinking, okay, yeah, you know what? Business can be done this way. Let me give you a great example of this. It's my accountant, and what a lame, boring example, you know, to use of an account, right? I mean, if there's accountants listening to this, you know, God bless you, but it's the most boring, you know, painful industry ever, right? I can't handle numbers at all. But my accountant, one of the things I love about him is, guess what? If I call him or if I email him, he does not send me a bill at all. He was like, why would I do that? He was like, I would hate it if someone did that to me.
Right.
He was like, anytime you have a question, whatever. And I was like, what if it takes an hour? And he was like, then it takes an hour.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I think I love you, accountant. You know, what a wonderful thing, right? You know, because I've got friends that I'm like, well, email your accountant and ask him this. And they're like, well, you know, that he's going to charge me for that email. And I'm like, you know, well, you know, that's horrible, right? So, this, again, it's just a simple example of how someone in a service-based mm-hmm. business said, here's my belief. This is what my brand's going to be. This is how I choose to do business. And let's see what happens. And when you do that, it seems like you just start keeping the customer in mind more, and that's why they relate to it so much.
I want to make sure I get all my questions answered because I have so many. Let's see. This one I definitely need to answer because I fall into this trap, or this, I guess, pitfall of something I never really did. But you say all great brands have a creation story. So my question is it ever too late to tell your story? And what if you've been in business for a couple of years, but you've never really actually shared sort of how you got into the business and what really makes you passionate about it? Can you sort of go back and say, hey, guess what? This is why I'm here.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up because I'm the same way. I've been helping people broadcast their creation story for 10 years, and it wasn't until a couple of years ago that I thought, well, crap, I've never even told anyone mine, right? It was actually when I got the book deal, I thought, I'm going to have to put that in there. And I realized I wasn't telling. And you know what happened? For me, it was simply I didn't have the rags-to-riches story that a lot of people have. I've been dead broke, and then I've been, you know, successful, right? And, yeah, but I'm not, you know, like, I remember, let me give you an example of this. I was speaking at an event one time, and the gentleman that went before me, you know, had tears in his eyes, and the audience is crying. He's talking about being homeless and living under this bridge and, you know, sleeping in, you know, strangers' cars and, you know, just this horrible stuff, right? And then, you know, now he's on top of the world and he's a multimillionaire and all this stuff. And I thought, crap, that's a good story. And I don't have that. I was born in a house. I always had a house. My parents are still married. Like, you know, it's like nothing exciting, right? Like I never, you know, I didn't lose a sibling. I did, I've got the Brady Bunch, you know, boring family of just, well, this stinks. There's nothing cool about my story, right? And because of that, I thought, you know, well, I won't share it. Who cares, right? That's a false thing. So, AK, you have to go back and start telling that story because people do want to know. And for those listening, what the creation story is exactly what you were saying a moment ago. How you came about to do what it is that you do. You know, we've heard about, you know, Steve Jobs building, you know, computers in his garage and Michael Dell, you know, selling computers out of his dorm room and, you know, all of these kind of things. Those stories fascinate us because we love to see how things started. We love it. And when we know that, we are so much more attached to the brand. You know, we are so much more interested in the brand and knowing, you know, what's really taking place, you know, behind this stuff. I mean, you look at Pepsi, for example, and I'm not knocking Pepsi besides the fact that they are farly inferior to Coke in both taste and brand, but there's no really cool story there, right? But Coke has the great story of the pharmacist who was trying to, you know, create medicine and ends up, you know, creating this new drink that then, by the way, you know, changed, you know, the whole food industry. Right? You know, it was an accidental thing. It's just an interesting, you know, story. So that's what the creation story is. It's important because it makes you more human to your audience. And to answer your question of, is it ever too late? Absolutely not. You said it actually best when you said, you know, people want to know just why you got into it. That's the thing. I ask people all the time when I say, you know, well, what do you do? And then they will say, I'll be like, you know, well, why in the world did you do that? Right, you know, what led you to that? Like, that's usually the next question, because that's the more interesting answer.
All right, good. I have homework now. My next book. God, have you told your creation story?
Oh, geez, probably, but not in a concise version. I've got stories. I think there's a book. There you go, John. AK and I need to actually co-author a book. I'm sure we could.
There you go.
We've got stories.
Like,
we've got stories to tell. How did we come about to tell? You know, start Social Geek Radio. That alone is a good story, which we've told many times. But
that's true. Well, I think I have. Well, this will go along the lines because I think. And I think this will be my final question, and I'll let you get in your questions since I've been hogging, John.
That's okay.
And this is kind of tied into what we were just talking about, but also going back a little bit with regards to self-promotion and, you know, telling people now to go out and write their creation stories about how they get started. To me, I think this is a caution of a lot of people, is I think there's a fine line between feeling like you're bragging, whether you're bragging or not, and self-promotion. And you do a really good job in your book of distinguishing the difference between bragging and self-promotion and sort of what to do and what not to do. Can you just talk briefly a little bit about that real quick?
Yeah, sure. The best way I know to sum it up is to change your paradigm of what you think self-promotion means, because what self-promotion really is about is it's about the value you bring to people. So self-promotion is not about you. It's about what you do for people. And that's it. You know, if it's about you, it's bragging. If it's about how you help people and you know, your product or service betters their lives, that's promotion.
That is easy enough.
Well, yeah, I'm tweeting that one. I mean, I have to sit and think about it. Self-promotion is about what you do for people. And that's, you really do have to sit and tell yourself that over again, because when you think of it, the other way, it's bragging. But if you're self-promoting to benefit others, it's okay.
That's right. Can I go on a rant for a second about this?
Go for it.
Because especially as it ties into social media, because this just drives me nuts. And I know you guys have seen it every single day. People will like their own Facebook status. People will retweet compliments that someone tweeted to them. If you're a person out there who does this, stop it. You would not, first of all, liking your own Facebook status. We know you like it. You wrote it. Of course you like it. Why would you hate it, right? I like every status I've ever written. I think they're all brilliant because I wrote them. You know, me and my mom are batting 1,000 on whether or not my Facebook statuses are awesome, right? You know, we're the only people who think every one of them are great. Retweeting a compliment on Twitter. I get it. When someone says something nice about you, it's exciting. I love it. I print those off and I hang them on the refrigerator. I think it's a wonderful thing. But to retweet them so that everyone then can see, hey, look, this person said something nice about me, like, what? I don't understand why that makes sense to people online when they wouldn't do it offline. You know, if we were at a networking event, I'm not going to come up to you, AK, and say, hey, guess what Deb just said about me? She just told me my book is awesome. Right? Wouldn't that be weird? I mean, I'd be like the biggest jerk in the room. Yet we do it online every single day, and it makes no sense to me.
Now, every time I see somebody doing that, I'm going to crack up and think about that.
Oh, that's funny. I had this visual of me walking up. Hey, AK. Oh, my goodness. I will tell you that I'm looking at the chat room, and you've got some fans here. They're saying that they can't tweet everything that you're saying because it's all good stuff. So.
That's a great thing.
I fried my computer before the show, and I would have been live tweeting this like no other. And I'm sitting here like, I can't be tweeting this. I'm gonna have to.
She can't tweet, but I'm sitting in for you, AK. I'm not doing too bad. So I've got them. I'm quoting John like crazy.
Wonderful. It's all been exceptionally quotable, and I will definitely be re-listening to the recording and then blogging about it as well. But Deb, do you have any final questions for John before we have him share all his ways
with you? I think you've asked them all, and I've been looking here at what others are saying. It's all really good stuff. So before we release you, John, and we send you back home, we all need to know. I found it today, but give us your handles. How they can find you? How can they find the book? What's the best site to go to get it? I did see where I downloaded a couple of free copies. I found that today.
If you go to brainagainstthemachine.com, you get 3 free chapters of the book. If you want to just go straight and buy the whole thing, which means I will love you forever, you can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever fine books are sold. And then you can find out about me. My website is johnmichaelmorgan.com. And then, of course, I'm obsessed with Twitter, and that's, Twitter.com/John Morgan.
John Morgan. Yes. Well, you will love me forever because I plan on buying the book. And I can't wait to read the whole thing.
Well, I was thinking we might have to have John back since I'm only less than halfway through the book and have this many questions just from the first half. We might have to do a part 2.
I think that would be a good idea.
We should do a part 2. Yeah.
All right.
Because I think the second half of the book is actually probably better.
Oh, my gosh. I can't even imagine. The first half is so good.
Thanks.
And while AK was asking you questions and trying not to tweet, she's been text messaging me about the book. It's like, he's awesome. You got to go get the book. It's like, I'm going to get it. This is great. Very good. Well, we should probably let you go for the night. Thank you very much. And if you run into our buddy Dave Delaney, would you please tell him we said hello?
I certainly will, because I owe Dave lunch or dinner or something, because he has been asking me and bugging me, and I have sadly been too busy, and that is not acceptable.
That's not acceptable. And he was so kind to introduce us to you in a roundabout way when he was on the show. So thank you, Dave Delaney, if you're listening, and I'm sure he is. So, John, it's been great, and when AK and I are in Nashville, we expect to have coffee with you.
Absolutely. Just let me know. I'm always here. I've lived here my whole life. I'm not going anywhere. Nashville's the best place on the planet. Actually, it's not, but I'm too lazy to move.
He's too lazy to move. And I can send your dad a text message, but he wouldn't respond to me, so just tell him I said hi. It was nice to...
I'll let him know that someone on the internet says hi. And I'll just watch his head explode as he can't even comprehend what I'm talking about.
Oh, very good. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, John.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Hey.
Oh, he's really, really nice, AK.
I know. I thoroughly enjoyed that.
I did, too. So now we have a few minutes, but how are we going to – do we have time for Geek It Out?
Yes, what time is it?
Okay, well, we have time. I just want to make sure you're good with it. So let me get this song rolling.
It's a very geeky show. A tiny listen to his mother. Don't show me.
I just have to play that song. I just, if we were going to go off the air and not geek it out, I just have to play that song.
So yes, again, I sadly must have fried my computer or something. I spilled my drink on it right before the show, and it won't even turn on. So I had all of my geeking out tabs open in my browser. So I'm kind of winging this. So I apologize if it's not as totally awesome as it usually is. I did want to mention, I just saw this, everybody knows if you've ever listened to the show, that Deb and I are completely obsessed with the Charity Mile app. And they are nominated for a Shorty Award. So if you love Charity Miles as much as we do, and you go, and I think it's just shortyaward.com, or if you follow Charity Miles on Twitter, they've tweeted it out as well, and you can vote for them. So I think that would be really awesome, because I think they totally deserve it.
I do too. And I know they're receiving a different award. Do you remember what? I can't remember what the award is, but I know Gene has already been notified, and he plans on getting, well, that's for South by Southwest. Anyway, he gets all kinds of awards.
Yeah, that was awesome. All right, so the first one I'm going to share is actually one that former Social Geek Radio co-host and our wonderful friend BJ Emerson emailed to us today. And this one is glassgiant.com. And you can really go to glassgiant.com and get there from there. It's a generator of sorts, so you put in a picture, you type in a message, and there's a whole bunch of different ones, and your image and your message will appear on, you know, billboards and this, that, and the other thing. But the one he sent us specifically, which I love and think is really cool, is
cool.
glassgiant.com/custom_keyboard. Yeah, and you just type in a word, and it sort of brings up a little screenshot of a keyboard, and it puts whatever you type where, like, the shift key would be. That's a kind of fun little branding pitch. And I did one for a client this afternoon or this evening, and I just said, what if you needed to just press this key, and boom, this would appear in your house? And it was like, it's almost that easy, but you have to go to the website first, you know, type thing. So
yeah, I think it's pretty cool. So now I would take, and the one that BJ did for me, you know, has Deb CE. So I'm trying to figure out, I'll have to go back and figure out how can I download that other than just screen capture it.
Yeah, I don't know if you, I did a screen grab, but I don't know if you could just right click on it to save image or whatever.
Yeah, copy it. Yeah, I'll have to play with it because I'm thinking there's a blog post there somehow.
Yeah, definitely. And there were some other cool ones just on glassgiant.com. There was a scoreboard and some other fun things. So as mentioned in his email, he loves his generators, and this is definitely a cool
He
thing.
Does like his generators. Yep. So thank you, BJ. It was very, very cool.
The next one I have, we're going to give credit to another Social Geek Radio friend, which is my friend and partner in crime at Saying It Social, Sarah. And she sent one. We're in a book club together that she started. And we had this issue at our last book club. We were trying to figure out a book that we wanted to read for the next book club, and she found this site called Bookish, I think it is. She's in the chat. She can correct me in the chat if I'm wrong because I can't see anything. But I think it's bookish.com. And and put in the names of books or authors, and I believe probably things you've read in the past, and it will give you recommendations of things that you should read based on, I guess, what you've already read and what you're interested in and authors that you like.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, she says yes, and I'm on the site. That is very cool. We'll certainly have to share. I know Miss Cindy Perkins is listening, and she is, and so is Laurie W. is listening as well, both avid readers. I bet they'll love that site.
So for all the readers out there, here you are.
There you are.
The next one I have is, for everybody who has lost motivation on their New Year's resolution for losing weight, if that happened to be a goal of yours like it was mine, and I fall into this category, it's a site called DietBet.com. I think it is. Again, I'm going from memory. But so if DietBet.com is something really outrageous, I apologize, but I think.
Okay. Diet, and then what's B-E-T?
B-E-T, yeah.
Okay, let me check it out for you. Let's see. We'll see. Nope, it's good. You're good.
Okay. So diet,
I can remember.
It's like a crystal. It's not like a betting game, but there's a whole bunch of them that you'll see on the site, and you can say, okay, I'm going to pledge, or I'm going to pay $50 into this pot. And you have to lose like 4% of body weight or whatever theirs is in X number of times. and for all, and you have to like log your weight consistently, obviously. And I don't know how they go about proving it, but I'm sure you have to like take a picture of your scale or something like this. The winners who actually reach that goal share the pot. So if you really want something sort of hanging over your head as a way to sort of reach these weight loss goals, you can use this social sharing money bet diet game to facilitate this, sort of help keep you on track.
Very good.
Along those lines, and I know like this is very, very underpromoted, so I'm going to promote it right now, even though they're not paying me to promote this. But if you guys aren't Foursquare users and those who aren't Foursquare users, every April 16th is called Foursquare Day.
Foursquare Day.
Foursquare Day is 16th. It took me a little while to process that, the first Foursquare Day. I was like, really? Why? And I was like, oh, Michael. So they, if you go to the Foursquare Day Twitter account, it's just 4FQ Day, the number 4 and then FQ Day. They have a bunch of hashtags and information in their bio. But one thing they have started to implement that they actually wrote a blog post about, if you go to their blog, they wrote a blog post about it like last March, but it's for this coming Foursquare Day. And it's a hashtag that you use called Fit by Foursquare Day. And I guess they're going to do more around this in the next couple of weeks, hopefully, but some way to be able to use Foursquare to get in promotion, just to get out of your house and sort of out and get moving. So you can use the hashtag Fit by Foursquare Day, and supposedly, although I used it today and they have not tweeted you back yet, it's just speaking to people and giving you motivation and that kind of thing. So that's kind of a fun way to use social media to get out there and get fit.
Very good. Okay.
So,
I love, and I have to look at what day that Foursquare Day falls on, or
have
to plan. Yeah, I have to plan something. You know. Okay, Social Media Week's coming up.
It is in March, right? Like March.
No, Social Media Week starts. So I've got one for you. Social Media Week starts Monday, February 18th, and you know that some of us are going to be in Vegas for IFA. So we are going to kick off Social Media Week on the Saturday because we're getting together. That's when most of a lot of us are getting into Vegas. So we're having a tweet up on the Saturday night. We really should do a video Skype or have you there with us, because our Social Geek Radio listeners, Dana, will be there. I hate to tell you this. And Laurie's going to be there. And we're really missing you in Vegas. So we're going to have to Skype in, or, you know, a flat AK is just not going to work. So that's Social Media Week. And then on the Monday for Social Media Week, I am going to do another Charity Miles Walk, and I'm going to do it in Vegas. So if anybody's listening and they're in Vegas, whether they're attending IFA, but we're going to meet at the MGM Grand and do a quick Charity Miles Walk before all the events get started at 8:30 that morning.
Very cool. I'm so sad.
Yeah.
You have to have me there
fully
somehow.
We'll do, yeah, FaceTime, Google Hangout.
Cool.
We'll have you there, one way or the other. So the operator's telling us that we have to scoot.
Right.
And next week, we have someone coming onto the show from Cred. You know, there's Clout, and then there's Cred. And he's going to share some really new stuff that apparently is going on tonight. So the press release will be released tomorrow, and we'll get to be one of the first to interview them and talk about it next week.
Very cool. Super exciting.
Very cool. So have a good night, everybody. And AK, fix your computer.
Yeah. Yes,
sorry.
Thanks again to John for being a wonderful guest, and everybody
getting
the call online. And we'll talk to you next week.
Get the book. Okay.
All right, bye-bye.
Good night. I don't like that one.